Good morning, everyone. I'm very happy to be here this morning with this group of QP sisters to continue our conversations about pensions. It's a lofty goal that the union has set to get a pension plan for every QP member by 2013. And I think yesterday in the regional discussions, people were finding pockets of QP members in the regions and inside workplaces and bargaining units who don't have pensions. And that's kind of the thread we want to pick up this morning. Just to go back to Murray Gold's comments the evening before last, when he talked about the challenges facing pension plans, the first challenge he mentioned was coverage. And he connected the issue of pension coverage to low wages, to union density, to slowly declining unionization rates. And as things work out, the three sisters who we've invited to speak this morning actually represent the different parts of that picture that Murray was painting. So we're really happy to have them here. As trustees, when we all care passionately about pensions, but when we get together, we tend to talk about issues that mostly affect people who already have a pension, how to protect the pension plans we have and how to improve them. And those are important discussions for us to have, but it's not always easy to get the pension people like you together with members who don't have a pension to talk about how we can all work collectively to improve coverage. So this is the kind of conversation we're hoping to have this morning. And we've created this space here to have that conversation. I want to introduce the three panelists, and then we'll hear from them, and then we'll continue to talk after. On my left is Priscilla Libredilla from British Columbia. And Priscilla is the local chair of her unit in the Hospital Employees Union. She works at a facility called Inglewood as a care aide. Priscilla was one of the many members out in British Columbia who were affected by the privatization that happened of healthcare under Gordon Campbell. And she's going to talk to us about what happened to her in that situation and what happened to her pension. Beside Priscilla is Sister Amy Parker from Local 4742 in Elmont, Ontario, a beautiful little town right outside of Ottawa. And Amy is president of her local, which is a social services local, and one of the newer members of the multi-sector pension plan, which they started making contributions to in 2007. And beside Amy is Sister Therese Philippe from Local 2745 in New Brunswick. She's the president of her sub-local, and this local is a provincial school board local. And Therese sits on the full-time pension advisory committee for her plan, but she has some really interesting stories to tell us about her own personal experience with pension coverage as well as that of other members in her local. So with that, I'll turn it over to Priscilla.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for inviting me here. I'm a little bit nervous. So, when Bill 29 was created by the Liberals, which is really the thing that started everything, the chaos in British Columbia, in 2003, my husband was the first one who lost his job because he was working in a coastal health as a janitor. And the next year, following after that, I lost my job. My job as a care aide has been contracted out. And basically, we lost everything. The coverage, MSP, is still affects me right now. Before Bill 29, while I was working as a care aide, our private company, it's a semi-private, so we had a coverage like a registered pension plan. It's a private, but we have a pension plan. By 2004, our HCU collective agreement enabled us to join the municipal pension plan. And shortly after that, my job was contracted out, so I lost that plan. So everything went zero, benefits, no nothing. So because of my situation at that time, I decided to stay to work, to continue to work as a care aide in the same facility with a private company and took more than $7 of cut, including the benefits. So we didn't have any union at that time because we were told if you join the union, you will lose your job. Our life at that time was, we have to adjust everything. We have to take into consideration, like at that time, my daughter was going to a private school, so we were thinking of moving her to a public school to accommodate our budget. So anyhow, we decided to rejoin the union and make our lives better again. We hope, at least. But it wasn't easy. I was one of the bargaining officer on that table with our local. And we fought and we fought until we end up having an arbitrated contract. Well, our government in British Columbia are so nice, and so as the politicians, and so as the people that work with them. They gave us an arbitrated contract that gave us really no leeways. So because we are working for a contract company, they have to renegotiate their contract with the owners of the facility where I worked at and decided there's no more money. So when in terms of coverage with a pension plan, we didn't have any. All we have was the basic benefits, the wages that are still lower. And it was really a crappy contract. So listening to all you guys, you have all here, you have your pension and you wanted to make better, it made me wonder, how am I going to deal with that when I'm going back home, going back to my facility when we are facing layoff again? So because of the contract company doesn't have any, they don't have any, they terminated their contract with our employer. So we're facing layoffs again on August 29. So with thanks to the result of the Bill 29 of the Supreme Court, we are now talking to our employer, the owner of the facility, which is talking directly that we, you know, don't hire any contract company, no more privatization, just hire us directly and we'll take everything. But now I'm thinking, are we going to have pension in that one if we get a contract? So I don't know. So right now I'm also contemplating, do I have to switch union so I get the good benefits? Because right now my husband also is working for as a school board, so he is with QP. So that means that he has a better pension plan than I have, that I have nothing. So, like, sometimes I get confused with the HCU and QP, but now I know that I have better understanding now that we're all involved, but we're not really... Right now, you guys are lucky. You're thinking about your pension. For us, we're thinking about how we're going to keep our job because of Bill 29. So it's not easy. When I get my termination again on May 2nd, I got my termination letter again. That will be my third termination in that the same facility. Working the same job, dealing with same residents, well, some of them, because most of them are gone already. Same place, three termination letters. I mean, it's hard to... I wonder why it happened in British Columbia, but hey, I wish it won't happen in other provinces. So it's not easy working for a private company. Our job has been downgraded. When we first started, I actually thought that we've been exploited because we were the ones who stayed to work with the same company were exploited because we were the ones who trained the people who took over the jobs of the sisters and brothers who got laid off. So anyway, my wish right now and my hope is to come back to British Columbia and maybe somehow in there, my union, ITCU, will be strong to maybe fight for our pension, especially the ones who got contracted out. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Amy, and I work as a residential counselor in group homes out in Elmont. I work for the Mills Community Support Corporation. It's a very diverse corporation. We have a home support component where we provide services for seniors in the community. There's a property component where the corporation provides affordable housing in the community. And then there's developmental services where we operate currently 6 group homes and home share programs and semi-independent living programs for adults with developmental disabilities. I joined the corporation in 1999, and at that time there was no union. And over the first few years that I worked there, you would see workers come and go. And the core group that seemed to stay on all had the same issues and concerns. And one of them definitely was a pension plan. Our employer did offer registered retirement savings plan through a local bank on a volunteer basis and would match the employee 3% for 3%. However, we wanted a pension plan, and when we approached the employer, they were not interested or able at that time to put the time and energy into finding out what we would need to do to secure a plan. They took those who had raised the concerns out for lunch and invited a financial planner along to chat with them and felt that they had done their part. So the core group that still had these concerns did a little investigation, and we decided that the only way or the easiest way for us to secure a pension plan would be to join a union. And so we started investigating unions, and we had a number of people come out and talk to us and speak to us on what we would need to do and what would be involved. And obviously, we've selected CUPE. We were not successful the first year in bringing in a union. There was some discrepancy over job positions and who should be in the bargaining unit and who should not be. So when they voted the first year, there were a number of sealed ballots. And the vote was a tie, and we knew that those ballots were going to make or break us. But because we were a very, very small group, and I believe there were 5 sealed ballots, we elected to keep the ballots sealed. We waited a year, and during that year, the frontline workers got smarter, and management apparently not so. And so I contacted André Lamoureux at CUPE 1 year later and sat down and talked with him and said, we need to come up with a different plan this year. I would anticipate management would be expecting us. However, we came up with a plan and we did a mail out. And management thought that CUPE was soliciting business and ignored the mail out, and we had a landslide win. We were assigned a national rep, and our rep currently is John Gillies, and he has been with us since the initial process. And when he came out and met with us, much to his surprise, we did not have a huge long list of what we wanted to see happen at a bargaining table, but rather we wanted a pension plan and it was not negotiable. The other reason for wanting a union in was disparity in the workplace. And anything after that, we really, it was not of major concern to us. And when I was preparing to come today and I had talked to John a couple of weeks ago, he reminded me that after he had met the initial core group, and you must remember that all of the people who are now bargaining unit members were not in that initial group because we weren't sure who might support us and who might not. So when he met us and heard our concerns and then went on to meet the members, he reminded me of our maintenance man, Tom, who sauntered over to him and in his low-key voice and laid-back manner said, "I don't need more holidays. I don't need a wage increase. I would like a pension. I would like a career, not a job. And at the end of my career, I would like to be able to walk away and still know that there's some security there for me so that I can have a life." I must say one other thing. In bargaining, we bargained the first collective agreement for just over 6 months, over 24 meetings, and we did secure the pension plan in that first agreement.
Therese will be speaking in French, so you might want to get your headsets ready.
Bonjour et merci de l'invitation. En étant parmi des activistes de régime de retraite, je vais vous présenter un petit peu d'historique et des statistiques. Ma section locale, le CSFP 2745, représente 3000 membres au Nouveau-Brunswick, 98% des femmes dans le système d'éducation du Nouveau-Brunswick, des assistantes à la bibliothèque scolaire, des aides enseignantes, des intervenantes en milieu scolaire, des adjointes administratives. Ce sont toutes des employées 10 mois par année. Les seuls employés à 12 mois, ce sont les supports administratifs dans les bureaux des districts scolaires. Anciennement, nous étions conjoints avec le local 1253, des confrères et des consoeurs ici, des conducteurs d'autobus et des concierges. Dans l'année 1974, nous avons dû divorcer, mais nous sommes encore en bonne relation avec mes confrères et consoeurs. Mais comme tout divorce, les coûts sont toujours en double. Donc, on convient à cette heure maintenant à les coûts administratifs. Nous, on doit payer nos coûts administratifs et eux aussi doivent payer leurs coûts administratifs. Et je vais revenir sur ce point un petit peu plus tard. Mais le régime de retraite que j'adhère est le régime à temps plein. Et pour être admissible, il faut travailler 31 heures par semaine. C'est un plan obligatoire à prestations déterminées. Sur 3000 membres, nous avons seulement 600 participants. En 1994, un nouveau régime a été créé pour les employés à temps partiel. Mais ces employés-là, à 10 mois par année, une grande majorité travaillait seulement 15 heures par semaine, 20 heures par semaine, la majorité 25 heures par semaine. Et ce régime est à base volontaire et cotisation déterminée. La section locale promouvoit énormément l'importance de s'adhérer à ce régime, mais le message était bien clair. Les membres n'avaient pas d'argent. C'était soit apporter, payer pour du lait ou cotiser d'un régime, mais la majorité des femmes prenaient payer pour le lait pour leurs enfants. À notre dernière ronde de négociations, nous avons été capables de négocier 39 semaines garanties parce qu'on était rendu à un point que l'employeur, dès qu'ils avaient une journée pédagogique pour les enseignants ou une rencontre parent-maître, on était mis à pied. Donc, c'était rendu non seulement qu'on était des employés 10 mois par année, mais on avait énormément des petites semaines de travail. Et vous savez, des petites semaines de travail, bon, ben, ça rapporte des petites semaines à des cotisations pour adhérer à un régime. Et ça affectait même notre assurance-emploi. Parce que chez nous, là, on est connus comme des « repeaters », là. Parce qu'on est sous l'assurance-emploi et oui, il faut faire 2 semaines d'attente pour notre assurance-emploi à chaque année. Donc, à notre dernière négociation, on était capable d'avoir 39 semaines garanties. Et aussi, pour nos aides-enseignantes et nos intervenantes pour l'année scolaire 2006-2007, un garantie de 26 heures et quart pour toutes les aides-enseignantes et les intervenantes. En 2007-2008, on leur a garanti 28 heures par semaine. Donc, notre défi est de transférer tous les employés permanents dans le régime de retraite à temps plein. Parce qu'on veut certainement augmenter le nombre de participants pour donner plus de valeur à notre plan. Pour revenir à la séparation ou au divorce de la section locale 1253, c'est certain qu'il faut placer plus d'emphase. On aurait dû plus placer d'emphase sur l'effet néfaste de la séparation concernant le régime de retraite. C'est aucunement pour critiquer, mais je dis juste que je pense qu'on aurait peut-être dû y penser à ce côté-là. Moi-même, je suis un employé du district scolaire 5, l'Étoile du Nord, depuis 1988. Donc, c'est facile de croire que je devrais avoir comme 20 ans de service dans mon régime. Mais hélas, ce n'est pas le cas. Au Nouveau-Brunswick, la définition d'un employé établie dans la loi relative aux relations de travail dans les services publics, on doit faire 6 mois consécutifs. Pour moi-même, ça m'a pris 6 ans pour l'obtenir, mon statut. Donc, aucunement capable d'adhérer à un régime et aucun bénéfice. Quand j'ai finalement obtenu mon statut, j'avais un poste de moins de 31 heures. Mais l'employeur ne m'avait pas avisé de l'existence du régime de retraite à base volontaire. À ce temps, les ressources humaines faisaient parvenir la documentation par courrier interne à l'école. Puis moi, malheureusement, j'avais un directeur d'école, pas par sa faute non plus, parce qu'on n'avait pas des secrétaires administratifs, des secrétaires d'école à plein temps dans les écoles. Donc, lui, il fallait qu'il s'occupait de la poste puis des choses comme ça. Donc, ma belle petite lettre de pension, là, ben, je ne l'ai jamais eue. Tout ça pour vous dire que les deux membres de notre école, à cette école, on n'a pas pu adhérer à notre plan à base volontaire. Mais en participant à une réunion syndicale, on nous a avisé de l'existence de ce plan. Donc, on a vite approché la section locale, expliqué la situation. Le comité du régime a accepté de nous accorder un rachat de service pour ce temps non contribuable. Et on a dû énormément débattre notre cas parce qu'ils disaient, mais vous avez, c'est une base volontaire, vous pouvez pas faire ces rachats de services-là. On a dit, attendez une minute, c'est votre responsabilité comme employeur de nous aviser de l'existence de ce plan. On ne l'a pas su. On veut participer. Maintenant, les ressources humaines rencontrent un nouvel employé éligible pour ce plan. Et l'employé doit signer une formule pour dire « j'accepte, j'ai eu connaissance ou je refuse ». Mais au moins, il est certain de savoir que le plan existe. Du côté syndical, on fait énormément, on continue notre promotion du plan. Aussi, on a obtenu une entente réciproque que si tu changes des heures, tu es capable de transférer ton régime du temps plein à temps partiel ou du temps partiel à temps plein. Donc, après 20 ans de travail dans le système d'éducation, j'ai seulement qu'un total de 9 ans de service, moins de 50 % de quoi ce que j'ai travaillé. Et à cause de ces inégalités et de ces injustices, c'est pour ça que je me suis impliquée dans le comité de régime. Mais je veux prendre cette occasion pour remercier notre expert de régime de retraite au Nouveau-Brunswick. Confrère Raymond Légère m'a initié au régime de retraite et par sa passion, par son encouragement, je te remercie Raymond personnellement de tout ça. C'est toujours un plaisir de travailler avec toi à tes côtés. Donc, c'est tout. Merci.
Okay, so I see these sisters as kind of on the front line of the battle for pension coverage. And I want to thank all of you for those really good stories. Sad, I mean, the good stories are always the worst stories in these situations. And I'd like to invite any comments or questions. We have, as I said, set this goal of a pension for every member by 2013. So something people could maybe think about is, what can we learn from the stories we've heard? As a union, what could we learn? As trustees in our individual plans, what could we learn?
Yvonne Sullivan, Local 2329. First of all, I'd like to thank the sisters for putting a personal face on pensions. Sometimes we forget that we're just not thousands of plan members. We're each individuals with challenges and requirements of our plan that sometimes are met and sometimes are not. Also, it brings to mind that in the goal to achieve these plans by 2013, that we have to realize the fact that the workplace is changing. We're getting more women in the workforce, more part-timers, more equality-seeking groups. And I think that the experiences of the sisters illustrated that it's not just to get a pension plan. It's to get a pension plan that suits the needs of the participants. And I think that's something that we have to keep in mind in the goal of getting a plan, not just a plan for a plan's sake, but making sure that everybody in the plan is represented and feels comfortable with the benefits they have. Thanks.
Thank you, sisters. I want to thank you all for telling your stories, and just a couple of questions. Amy, which plan do you belong to? You didn't say that.
MSPP.
Okay, the CUPE pension plan. And for everyone here, this panel was designed to put a face to this few words in our strategic directions document. As I said on our opening night, we don't know how many CUPE members aren't covered by a pension plan. We have an information vacuum, but it could be as high as 30% of our 570,000 members don't have pension coverage. And in the case of Priscilla, this HEU nightmare where 8,000 jobs were contracted out by Bill 29, they had language in their agreement that says the employer can't contract out, but the legislation overrode that language and allowed them to contract out 8,000 jobs. And what she described, I don't know if you're from Nanaimo,
I'm from North Vancouver.
North Vancouver, okay. Well, the same thing has happened in Nanaimo at a nursing home. Three times the contractor has changed because they can't make enough money, so they close up shop. The workers are there with the same residents, and they've had three different bosses since they ceased to be healthcare employees in the space of 3 years. They've never changed the job that they do. They go to work and do their job. The residents are extremely upset. The families are upset at the government. And the people went from about $18 an hour to $10 an hour originally. And this was our big dispute with another union that signed a voluntary recognition agreement with the employer with no members hired yet. And the wages were $10 an hour, no pension. And all those employees have now decided to rejoin with HEU, and the wages are back up, but they're not back up to $18 an hour. And the Supreme Court settlement striking down Bill 29 did not give all the employees their jobs back, but it granted, I think the negotiations are $75 million, which they're discussing how to distribute that to the affected employees, some of whom are, you know, all over Canada or in other countries now. So this nightmare continues, but there's some light at the end of the tunnel. They're all back under the roof. Ultimately, political action to change the government to bring back these healthcare jobs is the ultimate solution. And with respect to Teresa, I didn't have a question, but I'll share another small pension story with you involving Teresa and her family. She spoke at the New Brunswick convention. Therese comes from a small community called Dalhousie. It's today 4,000 people. Maybe it was a few more years ago. The biggest employer in Dalhousie was a private pulp and paper plant, CEP members. And they had 2,500 employees at one time. And in January, the doors were shut. There's now a few employees shutting down the plant. The last 500 jobs ended in January. In Therese's family, there's 12 people that worked in that plant. Grandfather, father, uncles, spouse, siblings, children. Four generations of her family worked for 555 years in that plant. 17 members, pardon me, sorry. 12 got their pensions. Her grandfather and her uncles, they got their pensions. Five were left with an average of over 25 years service each. And their whole pension plan thing remains up in the air now, as pulp and paper jobs are destroyed in all over Canada, but in New Brunswick. So there's pension issues within her own local with 10-month employees and fights with EI. And our jobs in that community are because there's a population in that community who works. But the biggest employer in town is now gone and closed up shop. And the remaining employees have a huge battle to find other jobs, but also to secure the pensions when they reach the eligible age. And that's an up-in-the-air question. So I don't know if our union can replicate this kind of discussion across Canada, but we would look at people in the room here to be at the microphones in your respective provinces as we fight to get pension coverage for all members. And if one of these groups ends up on the street fighting for a pension plan, they can't win that alone. They need other CUPE members picketing with them and supporting with them. So some of the staunchest advocates for pensions are sitting here. And when you go to your respective conventions or conferences, you are the most likely allies for these sisters and brothers who aren't here today who don't have pension coverage. And I just say on behalf of the group to all three of you, thank you for your stories. They represent huge challenges which aren't yours alone. They're challenges for our whole union.
Doug Kingston, New Brunswick. Therese, my question is to you. I remember when your two sisters came to the part-time pension plan and there was some discrepancy as to when you got the letter, didn't join, whatever. How far back did they allow you to go? Did they go right to the beginning, or did they bring you in part way up, or what did they allow you?
I was allowed to go back as soon as from the date of hire.
From your date of hire, you mean as soon as the pension?
From my date of hire as a permanent part-time.
As soon as the pension plan was offered to the 2745.
I wasn't an employee back then. Like when I first started working in 1994,
okay.
I was able to buy back that time.
What year did the pension plan, part-time pension season, come into existence?
94.
94, okay. Yeah. They allowed you right back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay, good, thanks.
Hi, Kevin Skerritt from Research. I want to thank the sisters, as everyone else has, for a great set of discussions. I want to pick up on a bit of the discussion that Priscilla talked about, like what is the commitment of the union to pensions? And I guess I want to just kind of make the point that where do pensions come from? Where do they come from in the first place? You know, it really was the historic struggles of workers, often through their unions, to establish the original concept that workers have a right to retirement security, to income security. And, you know, we've fought for that from decades ago and only got so far. I mean, really, as I think people in the room know, and we've talked about it this week, we never got even half of the workforce in Canada covered by a workplace pension. But the struggle continues. And I guess I want to pick up on what Paul was saying, because, in fact, as a union, I think most of the best unions, the strongest unions, and I think CUPE in particular, I think we can be proud that we are fighting for pensions when we're fighting against the kind of privatization and contracting out story that Priscilla told us. We're fighting for pensions and benefits and other rights. And when we're fighting to organize new groups, we are fighting for pensions. And in CUPE in particular, and I'm glad Amy's here to talk about that story, but we haven't unfortunately had enough time to talk about the multi-sector pension plan. QP, along with friends at SEIU, established this plan that Amy referred to, and I think probably many people here, but maybe not everybody, know about this really important plan, this multi-sector plan, which is a defined benefit plan available to all of our groups. Even the smallest employer, smallest local, now have a negotiable option that they can get into. And I want to add, because again, we haven't said, there is now an equivalent of that multi-sector plan for our brothers and sisters in Quebec, who unfortunately, for jurisdictional reasons and legal reasons, didn't have access to the multi-sector plan. There is now an FTQ launched, what they call a member-financed pension plan, which follows basically the same model. So the importance of that is we now have two really important tools to go across the country and aim to fulfill that ambitious objective that Paul talked about, coverage for all members or as many members as we possibly can get, which is terrific, and that's credit to some of the past efforts of folks in QP, QP's leadership, and so forth. And a last point I want to make, though, as well. I don't want to lose sight, and unfortunately we haven't had enough discussion about it, but another aspect of Labor's and QP's strategies around retirement income security is, of course, the continuing historic struggle for public pensions. And really, the CPP and the Old Age Security, OAS, they were also historic victories of the labor movement and of workers. When they were established and sort of built up in the 1950s and 60s, they weren't big enough. They're not enough to live on. And so I think there's a continuing discussion. This came up at the CLC conference in November. How can we continue our campaign and our work to extend pension coverage to all workers or as many as possible, but also recognize that's a tall order, and we also need improved public pensions. We need a much better CPP and OAS. So I just wanted to make sure that point got made, in the midst of this discussion about workplace pensions. But thank you to all the sisters.
I'd like to maybe move towards wrapping this up by asking all of you one last question. So here's a room of QP's pension people, people who are directly involved in pensions, care passionately about pensions. And I'm wondering if we could just get a bit of advice from you, from where you sit on the front lines of this pension coverage issue, and you could just tell us what would it take from where you sit and the members you know, what would it take for us as a union to reach that goal of a pension for every member by 2013?
I think today is a great start in terms of education and having the opportunity to interact with a variety of people and seeing pension from a number of different angles. Education, not only within QP and for people that QP represents, but for the employers that we work for. So many times I will hear from an employer that it's too risky, they're concerned about the time, effort, or energy that it's going to take on their part to be involved, and they're concerned about sharing information. So I think, although it's great to have opportunities like this to provide education within QP, we also need to have opportunities where the employers can become involved and become more informed.
Pour moi, c'est certain que c'est éducation, éducation, éducation. Je trouve que c'est très important d'aviser nos membres d'adhérer à des régimes de retraite. Pour moi, recevoir une retraite, c'est un salaire. Et on mérite, comme travailleurs et travailleuses, d'avoir un salaire après toutes ces années de service-là. Aussi, j'aimerais voir que chaque province, qu'on se regroupe, Comme au Nouveau-Brunswick, j'aimerais ça que nos plans qu'on a, qu'on se regroupe, nous, comme qui siège sur les comités de régime, et qu'on partage nos défis et qu'on partage nos réussites pour pas toujours avoir à inventer la roue toute seule dans notre groupe. Donc, j'aimerais voir ça. Et aussi, j'aimerais voir que les fédérations se joignent à ça aussi. Car j'ai entendu dire qu'il y a des fédérations où ce que c'est qui se regroupent. Puis je pense que c'est important qu'on fait ça, qu'on s'unit. Et que, parce qu'ensemble, on peut plus faire la différence. Merci.
Well, that's really a tough question. Because right now, for me, securing my job is my main goal. But I'm hoping that in the near future, after maybe negotiating with our employer right now, which is the owner of the facility, maybe we can face in the pension plan in the near future, not maybe right now, next year or in 2 years, because right now we're trying to really secure our job. Thanks.